Back with you here on 92.9 The Game is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. We will take more of your calls. If you're on hold, stay there. You're first up when we get back. If not, grab a line. Garrett Chapman will be screening the calls this evening. Appreciate him filling in for Big O, who will be back tomorrow. Right now, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Will McFadden, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. Will, unfortunately, only one place to start this evening, and that is with QB1. That has been the main and driving force of conversation after the game. He goes 12 for 28, looks absolutely solemn in the post-game press conference and with our very own Dave Archer. So what did you make of his performance? What went wrong? What did you see that he was not seeing and diagnosing on the field on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally understandable place to start, right? And unfortunately, it's kind of like some of the things that I expected going into the season are playing out, but they're playing out in not like the worst times possible, but just you look at the red zone, for instance, right? For the first 6 weeks or 7 weeks, they were moving the ball really well. And then some of the, I think, inconsistencies, whether that is throwing the football, the communication kind of coming from the sideline up in the box, like getting that relayed into the huddle, then getting out, and all of that stuff. When you're dealing with a young quarterback who's only played 11 games, right? And I know to anybody who wants to make the counter Michael Penix argument, that's going to sound like, okay, you're making all these excuses for him. But bear with me for 1 second, right? He is still a rookie in the NFL. And all of the college reps that he played matter, but this is a new league and a new sport and all of that. So I expected these inconsistencies. I expected some really great moments from Michael Penix, and I expected there to be some moments where you kind of scratch your head and you say, okay, let's see how it looks the next time around. And that has been the story, I think, of this season. A lot of that has to do with some of the defenses they're playing. I think some of that has to do with the offense and getting in tune with the guys around him. And that was why I wanted to pose the question to Raheem Morris yesterday, because specifically I feel like the area that I have locked into on this are when he's facing pressure, which he did a lot against the Colts, right? Is those zero blitzes, those kind of simulated pressures. Normally what I'm used to seeing in those situations is, okay, you identify the pressure, you make the check for the blocking, you keep the back end, what have you, but then you've also got that hot route, right? You've got the quick slant, you've got a flat route, like anything to get the ball out of your hands fast. And I feel like that's the part that I haven't seen yet. So I asked Raheem, you know, are you comfortable with these alerts, the hot checks, all of that? And he seemed to, and this was the theme kind of yesterday, say, yeah, I think Mike has a really good handle on what we're asking him to do there on that part of the offense. We've got to get the guys around him on the same page. So I think it's easy to look at Mike as the kind of like focal point of this because he has the ball in his hands. And he's a rhythm thrower too, Chris. I don't think so many people realize this. He's like fifth or sixth in the percentage of throws on rhythm this season. He's like right behind Matthew Stafford, which, you know, there's a comp for you. But to me, that means that he needs the guys to be in the right spot when they're going to be there. He needs the offensive line to kind of hold up for some of these deep dropbacks, X, Y, and Z. It's like he wants to throw the ball in rhythm. So I think that does put a lot of onus on the other 10 guys around him. And yeah, it didn't look great at times on Sunday, and that's for them to figure out. But I don't think I'm totally surprised by it, and I don't think it means that Michael Penix Jr. is a problem or is not the answer for the Falcons moving forward. It just means he's a young quarterback who's getting used to life in the NFL.
Okay, so with all of that setting the table, how much of everything you just said do you feel falls on Michael Penix Jr. himself? Essentially, how far behind the eight ball do you think he is based on where we thought he could be 9 games into the season, whether that's preparation, whether that's doing what he needs to do to be ready on game day, whether that's film study, or how much of it is on the coaching and not being able to get him up to speed and where he needs to be? Because I think that's really the main debate that's going on right now.
Yeah, I don't even know if he's not like up to speed. It doesn't look like he's over his skis or anything to me. Like, he looks like he can run an offense. There are absolutely some plays where, yeah, like some of the intentional groundings, right? Like, that's a good example probably, because I think that is, it's fair to say that has been a little bit of an issue with, all right, you're in pressure, you're kind of like trying to avoid a sack, which is great, but then where's that next level of awareness? That stuff doesn't necessarily change overnight. That it takes a lot of time, it takes some reps, it takes experiences in those moments. So when you're looking at kind of the coaching and the player and the preparedness of all of this, there have been a lot of moments where the play has been there, and for whatever reason, either the ball hasn't gone in that direction, or it has, and it was a great throw and it was dropped, or maybe the case like with Kyle Pitts and the potential touchdown, it's slightly off, right? And in that situation, you could say, yes, Michael Penix underthrew the ball, but I would venture to say that there are 31 other starting quarterbacks around the NFL who from time to time are going to underthrow a deep ball. That's not going to make me say Michael Penix Jr. can't throw the deep ball. It's going to make me look at, okay, that play, he didn't have it. Could Kyle Pitts have jumped up and maybe made a contested grab the way Drake London might? Yeah, he probably could. So that is where, as a coach, you take that, then you work on those two guys, and then the next time they're in that situation, you hope to see the change. So I've kind of felt like they've had game plans that have presented opportunities for them. If you're looking at the macro, the run versus the pass and how they're producing there, yeah, like you can see trends, right? They're clearly identifiable. I just kind of think it comes back to they're not hitting the key plays in the key moments, and that is going to make you lose some games. And then it's the inconsistency of a young player with, you know, a lack of time with kind of some key guys like Darnell Mooney and whatnot. So I don't think there is a clear answer here, Chris. As tough as that is and as unsatisfying as that is also life in the NFL.
No, you're 100% right, as we're talking with Will McFadden, senior writer and editor of AtlantaFalcons.com. With the defense, it's almost sort of the same thing, the Jekyll and Hyde of it, Will. So unfortunate, the offense can't sustain drives, can't get in rhythm. The defense has to be on the field for so much more time. The time of possession is completely lopsided the last couple of weeks. So you get 7 sacks, which is great, but then you allow Jonathan Taylor to get almost 300 all-purpose yards. It's partly because of the defense's fault, but honestly, it's also part because of the offense and their inability to sustain on third down and stay on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. You hit the nail on that. It was funny. I was in the middle of recording our post-game pod, Falcons Final Whistle, with Torrey McElhaney, and it was kind of like in that moment, I don't know, I was watching the game, obviously, but it was kind of like then I did the box score check. And it like hit me in real time. I was like, oh my God, the Colts had how many yards? Jonathan Taylor had how many yards? Like I know that 83 yard run counted for a lot, but it felt like the box score was not indicative of the vibe that I got from Atlanta's defense early on in that game, which was, man, they're going toe to toe with the league's best offense here. Right. And they are imposing their will in some ways. And the pass rush is getting to Daniel Jones. But like you said, over the course of a game, this is why coaches are so, serious about stressing the three-phase complementary football nature of it, is because the way the offense was unable to sustain longer drives and pick up third downs, yeah, Atlanta's defense was on the field, I think, 70 plays. That's too many, and especially in a game that's going to come down to the wire and go into overtime, the advantage totally swings in the favor of the offense. That is going up against the more tired and just like the defense that's been out there on the field all game long. So 100% agree with you there. I think the defense is not an issue. They've been a really good surprise, but they cannot be out there for 70 plays. And I do look back at the offense being unable to sustain some of those drives as a reason.
I got to admit, I thought there was a real chance that the Falcons would have an interim special teams coordinator after what happened in that game and in Berlin versus Indy. 3 separate drives started on your side of the 50, which is just inexplicable. This is not the first time that's happened with kick coverage. Marquise Williams, known as a good coach around the league, but it seems like for whatever reason, maybe partially due to the new rules, Will, special teams is really struggling right now.
Yeah, you know, for whatever reason, that has been the case. And you can look at it, it's not just the coverage units, right? Jamal Agnew not getting, I think, the number of returns that, or the level of return that he would want, that Marquise would want. I do believe Marquise is a good special teams coach. Like, looking at what his totality of work here in Atlanta has been, I mean, think back to the Raiders game last year on Monday Night Football. You get two blocked punts. I know one didn't really count as a punt, but like, who cares? You got a hand on the ball. In my book, that's a block. So we have seen the good from a Marquise Williams unit. But yeah, for whatever reason this year, there's the leaky yards on kick and punt returns. There's the lack of kind of your own explosive plays. And then, of course, you know, the field goal kicking and kind of those journeys throughout this season. So it is like, that's a little bit, I think, of the Falcons are right there and they have not been able to break through or get over that hump in some of these games, because more often than not, I think it's fair to say two of the phases have let them down, whether it be offense and special teams or defense and special teams or offense and defense. Like, you need two of the three, and sometimes you need all three. And more often than not, I think the Falcons have really only had one phase clicking at a time, and that's not going to lead to many wins. So, yeah, I don't know what the answer is on special teams, because I don't know enough about special teams. But I agree with you that this has not been what they expected or what I expected at all.
Before I let you go, I know it's radio and I'm subject to hyperbole as nature of my job here on 92.9 The Game. But, Will, it is anything but must win, I think, is an unfair characterization for this game on Sunday in order to keep the season alive. I don't see any other way about it. They need to get this one, snap the losing streak, get back on track, and keep their very, very small, but the window is technically still open to get a playoff berth.
Yeah, it feels like that. If for no other reason, prove it to yourself. You know, right? Like, this is a team you know well, who gave you still probably your worst loss of this season. Here's a chance for a little bit of revenge to kickstart, hopefully, a second half run. No, they're not going to be mathematically out of it, but you're going to now be 0-3 in the division. The Panthers are going to have a clear lead on you in the wild card race. The NFC looks pretty loaded right now when you look at the playoff picture, the West and the North especially. So it's going to be tough. I think the next three games, that stretch, Chris, like, that's going to tell you everything you need to know. But obviously it starts on Sunday.
We'll appreciate the time as always. We'll check you out at AtlantaFalcons.com. We'll talk soon.
Of course. Anytime, Chris.
All right. That is Will McFadden there. When we get back, it's back to you on the phones. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. You just heard Will. This coaching staff has 8 games left to get number 9 back on track. Do you think they can do it? More of your calls coming up next.